As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hayes Show.
Welcome to the show. It's brought to you by The Athletic, along with us lot from The Square Ball. I'm Dan Moylan from The Square Ball with Phil Hay from The Athletic. He's on the line at home. Going to speak to you in a second. Just a quick reminder that you can read Phil's post-Southampton match report on The Athletic. Sign up right now. The offer is at theathletic.com/LeedsPod. Morning, Phil. Monday morning edition of the show. And you led off on your match report, actually, on Junior Firpo. So we should probably start there. The new star that we didn't know we had at Leeds United.
Onwards to glory for Firpo. Gracias, everybody. I've been saying a few times that the last league win was on bonfire night prior to Saturday, which seemed pretty apt given what had gone on in between. And it was almost as if I was watching the stadium at full time on Saturday, and it was almost as if people had forgotten what that felt like. And, you know, everybody was absolutely gagging for a result like that. In the same way as I think that, you know, Gracia would have been desperate to have started with a win, and Firpo, to focus on him, you know, initially, will have been gagging for a performance like that. You know, first league goal, moment in the sun, the sort of moment which, for months and months on end, you've never quite been sure whether it was going to come, whether it was going to get to this point. I do think with Firpo that over the past few weeks, and since he's come into the team after the concussion that Pascal Struijk suffered, that he has looked like he's been taking steps towards a bit more competence, a bit more confidence, a bit more stability, I guess, in the position that he's being asked to play. But it's been an incredibly peculiar 18 months for him. I always think with Firpo that, on the one hand, what we've seen in the flesh confuses you about, you know, leaves you a bit perplexed about what he is and why it was that Leeds paid money for him, what they thought they were getting, because it has not been easy at all for him to settle at left back. And I get that he's had injuries and that's hampered him too. But, you know, the games that he's played, there've been kind of constant questions about his defensive positioning, what he contributes going forward. But then I think to myself that he was a kind of rising star at Real Betis, and he was good enough for Barcelona to want to sign him. And then when it came to finding a left back in that summer of 2021, Bielsa's last pre-season, you know, he was the left back that they signed, and he was the person who cleared what it tends to be a pretty high bar with Bielsa when it comes to transfers, when it comes to what is suitable and what he'll accept. And you sort of feel like that's impossible to do unless there's a player there, you know, unless there's some ability, there's some pedigree. I have to say with Firpo that I feel as if the more license that he's given to play going forward, and I guess the less responsibility that's on him to play defensively, the better he tends to look. And I think one of the things that was really noticeable about the performance on Saturday and the way in which Gracia set up, and I didn't think it was a vast swerve away from what Leeds have been doing previously. And there were parts of the game where it was mediocre and it wasn't really kind of catching light. But he did play with width on Saturday. It was very obvious against Southampton that both Nonto and Harrison had been told when Leeds were in possession to kind of hug the touchlines and get out wide and to make the most of those areas. And I think because of the setup, it meant that Firpo was able to overlap and underlap for a lot of the game against Southampton. It wasn't as if that appearance in the box to score with 12, 13 minutes to go was the first time he got forward. You know, he'd been at it all game. He'd been trying all game to do that. And I did think that tactically it was kind of quite savvy. It was just generally in my view, a pretty pragmatic day on a day when pragmatism was called for. And I think all round there'll be a lot of people who are happy with how it went.
Yeah, my big takeaway from it was just the structure. We just looked really, really organised. The shape was obvious from the off, what we were trying to do. That 4-4-2 with the inverted wingers that we spoke about in the build-up to the show, Phil, where you had Aaronson up front somewhere near Bamford, and then you had Harrison tucking in from the right and Nonto tucking in from the left.
Yeah, and you'll have seen that in the second half. I mean, we were looking at the structure right at the very beginning, and it was a little bit difficult to work out whether actually it wasn't just a 4-2-3-1 with Aaronson in behind Bamford, and it did feel fairly fluid, although that's what they always said about Gracie at Watford when he played a 4-4-2. It could look like your 4-2-2-2 because your wingers do come fairly central and come fairly narrow at certain points. But it was, I think, quite telling that Southampton at the start of the second half switched to a 4-2-3-1 themselves to try and get a bit more of a foothold in the game. Their strategy seemed to be to kill an hour of the game with Onuachu up front, and then, you know, to send on the substitutes that they did, Walcott included, to add a bit of pace and I guess a bit of dynamism. And I suppose to hope that the game was goalless as it was and then to win it in the last half hour. But I did generally feel that with the exception of the moment where Walcott went through and Firpo recovered to get a foot in and concede a corner, stop Walcott shooting across Melier, it didn't feel as if Southampton had a goal in them. It didn't feel as if they were going to score and were going to force the issue. It's important to say that they look, I think, pound for pound, like the worst team in the league. And beating Southampton alone is not going to keep you up. I think all it proves is that you are, at worst, 19th worst side in the league rather than 20th. But it was a game Leeds absolutely had to win, and I think they did deserve to win it. And there's something that Gracia said afterwards, you know, about the way he'd approached the game. He said that we knew that this was going to be very tight. We knew it was going to be very close fought, that it wasn't going to be an easy game. And I think what he was hinting at was that it was never going to be a wild spectacle. But he talked about waiting for a moment and, you know, waiting for the moment to come. And that's really what happened in the end. You know, Leeds had most of that game. They had a lot of pressure without creating killer chance after killer chance. But when that one came, Thurpo put it away. And it was the only result they could afford at the weekend. It had to be a victory. And it's the right start for Gracia.
Lord only knows what the Southampton defence was playing at as well, was it? I can't remember it was that stood in front of the keeper, but he was blocking his view to the extent where the keeper couldn't see anything. And then he just stood there and allowed the ball past him. He kind of almost made his profile smaller so the keeper could see the ball afterwards coming down his throat.
It was strange. It was Bednarek.
Bednarek, yeah.
And you're right. Rather than spreading himself and trying to get in front of the ball, he did seem to try and get out the way of it. And I don't know. I think if that's your goalkeeper, I know he's unsighted, but it wasn't as if it was hit with full force by Thurpo. I think another keeper might have saved that on a different day. But I don't know if you'd agree with this, but it felt as if it was coming without feeling as if it was the Alamo, you know, for Southampton, as if it was, you know, them clawing things off the goal line and near misses constantly. The pressure had just become one way. And there was a period in the second half where they were suddenly on the ball and they were suddenly spreading passes about and they were looking a little bit more lively. And I did think that the three substitutions they made changed the style of team that they were. I think had that worked for them, you would have said that from Ruben Seller's point of view, tactically, it was quite clever. But they were never able to get the claws into it properly. And it did feel as if Leeds were going to be the team who forced the goal out of it. I mean, there was that kind of horrible sense with 15 minutes to go that it was kind of creeping towards a 0-0 draw and that wasn't going to do anybody any favours. But without a doubt, there will be more difficult fixtures to come. There'll be teams who will, you know, away from home and also at Elland Road, play with far more ambition than Southampton did on Saturday. But that really was one of those games where you just have to deliver in terms of the result. No different to Everton the previous weekend. Everton didn't play brilliantly against Leeds, but they turned it on and they got the job done.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. Absolutely. Yeah, Southampton barely laid a glove on Leeds. Leeds, yeah, didn't really force that much out of the keeper until it came to the actual goal. But it felt to me like we controlled the game pretty much from the off and were the ones showing the intent to go out there and win it.
Well, also the structure, which you mentioned, and I totally agree with that. The shape was really good on Saturday. And yes, you know, just to repeat that point, you'll come up against teams who have far more in the way of attacking clout and are going to test that structure much more. But Gracia said afterwards, you know, if I can make this team defensively strong or defensively stable, then we go from there. And that seems to me to be a good way to go. They've got enough games left that they don't need to be going gung-ho at this stage. They need to start getting points on the board rapidly. And they're still going to need probably another 13, 14, 15 to make sure that they do stay up. And in the end, when you want them to win games, it comes down to scoring goals, doesn't it? That's what wins you games. But it's not a bad thing for this side to get out of the habit of conceding two a game, because I think if you go back to some of our podcasts right back at early part of the season when the defensive record was starting to slide, and we said, two concessions a game is a problem. It does catch up with you, and that does stop you winning the number of games you need to stay out of trouble, and that's how it's worked out. And yeah, I thought structurally it was good on Saturday. Grassi had clearly realised that taking risks, being reckless, was just not the order of the day. You needed a win from that game. You needed a win any which way. And he clearly felt that if it went the way it was going and carried on the way it was going, that Leeds would find a way out of that with 3 points.
One of the things I found fascinating, I think I've become a little bit more switched on to tactics since Bielsa was here, and then there was quite a lot of analysis of what Jesse Marsh was doing. So I've kind of been trying to understand tactics a bit better. And I thought it was fascinating to me on Saturday seeing the two up front for Leeds, because it changed the way in which we pressed. Like you'll have noticed if you saw the game, whether it was on telly or whether you were in the stadium, the press wasn't as aggressive from the front, was it? It was very, they were picking the moments, but what they were doing with having two of them in there, it limited where the centre-backs could go. It was forcing the centre-backs to pass it wide to the full-backs to try and make something happen. So it sort of shut down the middle of the park.
Just to be hip, it was a bit more of a mid-block, wasn't it, than a kind of high press. But it was measured, and again, it wasn't all out. It wasn't reckless. It wasn't giving Southampton much of a chance to play through the lines. And I don't know whether you noticed, but while Harrison and Nonto were very wide in possession, they were tucking in and coming narrow out of possession. And I think it was a way of saying to Southampton, you're going to have to go round us rather than through the middle. And it's not as if Leeds have been great defending out wide this season. But part of that, I think, is because of the way in which they committed players forward and the way in which, bodies committed to the press and space opened up in behind. It wasn't like that at all at the weekend. I mean, I did think, and I suspect you'll agree with this, that for a lot of the first hour, there was a bit too much of hit and hope to Nonto, I felt still. They were still a little bit in that mould of fire the ball to him, hope that something happens. But to give Gracia his due, it was Nonto that he replaced, with an hour or so to go. So if in any way there was an excessive reliance on him still, and if there is still, it wasn't as if Gracia was standing there saying to himself, I better just leave him on the pitch and hope that he does something. He did actively replace him. He put Somerville on. Somerville contributed to the goal with some pretty intelligent work out by the corner flag. It just worked as it needed to do. And, I said in my piece this morning, it wasn't immaculate. It wasn't sexy, but I don't think anybody was going to Elland Road on Saturday saying, give us a sexy game. Everybody just wanted to win.
As Sean Dyche's Everton proved the previous game, sexy doesn't really matter at this time, does it? It's about getting points on the board. I thought, yeah, you're right. It was a brave sub in my eyes, because there was that sort of general sense of everybody's voice going up an octave when they saw the number 29 got up, as in, oh, he's taking off Nonto, that kind of thing. But it forced Leeds United to think differently and play differently and try and explore some other avenues, didn't it? I thought. And the goal itself, actually, when you look at the various components that led to both the build-up, and there was a turnover of possession, but we won it back. But even still, that skill over in the northwest corner, first by Somerville and then the back heel from Harrison, I thought it was really, really good.
Well, also, with Harrison, the back heel suggests that he suspected that somebody, whether he knew it would be Firpo, but I think on that side of the pitch, you'd imagine it would be Firpo. He knew that somebody should be coming, and he knew that it was worth the risk of playing that ball fairly blind in the hope that somebody would be in enough space to shoot, which is exactly how it worked out. I think you're right about Nonto. I mean, I did see some complaining on Twitter after that decision, and it did. You're inclined to think, I think on the basis of what's gone on this season, that by doing that, you're removing probably your most, your most electric player or your most dangerous player. Although I do feel in the past few weeks, and since Nonto has had this post-World Cup explosion of form, I do think we've more and more seen teams waking up to that. It was very noticeable away at Forest, as an example, the decision to bring on Aurier and to say, listen, get on Nonto, pin him down, which is exactly what Aurier did. And Leeds just eventually ended up down a cul-de-sac in that fixture because there was nothing they could get out of him. And I think he has You know, he has drawn more attention. He has had more defenders doubling up on him, more defenders being wise to what he's trying to do. And he is only 18, and it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of pressure to carry in a season like this. So, you know, it was a good substitution. It worked in the sense that Somerville was involved in the goal. I found myself thinking on Saturday, actually, and this sort of relates a little bit to the football discussion as well, that I do feel like they're missing Rodrigo. You know, I do feel like it's been unfortunate that he's picked up an injury at the time where goals were flying in, where I think his performances for Leeds were more, there was probably more leadership in them than we've seen from him before. They were definitely more effective than they've ever been before. And I think he would be contributing pretty heavily to this, and he would be somebody that Gracia would want to be in the thick of it. I mean, he can't be too far away now. I would imagine he's probably got another few weeks, maybe another month. We're due to see Gracia later this morning, so I might well ask about Rodrigo and see where that one's going. But the only aim of the weekend was to make sure that they didn't drop points in that game. I don't think 0-0 would have been any good to either side. I think Southampton would have been happier than Leeds. But if you read a Southampton report this morning, one of the board members down there had sent an email around, you know, before the game saying it's a defining match for us. This, you know, this is critical. And I think if you marry that up with Southampton's performance, it doesn't paint the picture of a side who are going to stay up.
Just to correct you on Nonto's age, because if I don't do it, somebody will be in touch to do it.
Oh, is he 19? Sorry.
He turned 19 on the 5th of November.
You know how it is, Daniel. Once you get into your 40s, you don't count anymore, do you?
Yeah, who are you? Where are my glasses? All that kind of thing. It all starts to slip, doesn't it? Yeah, I agree on Rodrigo. We've kind of missed his explosive goal contributions, haven't we? Because I found that he's probably got better this season by doing less and just concentrating on making those runs to get the shots away. He was pressing less, wasn't he, I felt, under Marsh, in particular towards the end when he was scoring. Whereas, like, Bamford's, it's quite enigmatic, isn't it, in that he feels so important to the structure of Leeds, but I feel like sometimes we lose some goal threat with him because he does so much of the other stuff.
Yeah, well, that was how it was in, you know, in the promotion season. The idea really that you would get goals from him, but it wouldn't necessarily be 20 plus, and it didn't need to be 20 plus, because what he was doing by running the channels and pulling centre backs around was helping to create the flow that Leeds needed to dominate and to win games. And it worked incredibly effectively. I mean, this season, certainly, he's going to be compromised by the amount of time that he's missed through injury. And I know people will get tired of hearing that, but, you know, it doesn't let you find your flow in the way that I think Rodrigo has been able to. Rodrigo's been really influential player this season. He has. And I would say he's benefited from being able to play up front, which is definitely his preferred position. But to go by what happened at Valencia, he'll certainly have had many years where he was in a side who didn't press and were not, you know, trained to do that at all. They were very passive, that Valencia team. And whether or not that means that Rodrigo prefers that style of play, you know, whether he prefers being in a team who do that, is for him to say. But what you can definitely draw the conclusion of is that that was how, for many years, he was used to playing. And I think it will have been a shock to the system to have come to a side who went man-to-man and who pressed as aggressively as Leeds did under Bielsa. So I guess it's nice to think that he will be coming back at some stage before the end of the season. You always have that concern that because a player's been out injured, that is the kind of tapering time of getting back to full tilt. And I think it was always quite obvious under Bielsa that whereas somebody like Calvin Phillips seemed to be able to miss 6 weeks and then just drop back into the team, no problem, and crack on, Rodrigo's comeback always seemed to be slightly more gradual and take a little bit more time, but I get the feeling that they'll need him before this season is done.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So a good start for Javi Gracia. I don't think the work permit had quite been approved by the time that we recorded at the back end of last week, because we went on Thursday ahead of all that happening.
It had barely been approved by the time we sat down at his presser on Friday. Yeah, it was close on thing.
But he did get in the door, and obviously he's got 100% record. He's probably got the best win record of any Leeds manager of all time at the minute, hasn't he? No goals conceded at 100% of the points.
We went to Thorpe Arch on Friday, and we all got there around about midday. Presser was scheduled for 12:45. And at the time, nobody knew who was going to be speaking. We assumed it would be Gracia, and we knew that the paperwork was going on with the work permit that morning and his visa. So the assumption was that that would all get processed. But needless to say, if it hadn't done, and I don't think the Home Office tends to jump through hoops to satisfy the Premier League's broadcast requirements, if it hadn't got done, then it might well have been Michael Scubala, which would have been quite the spectacle, really, and quite the episode. And it was only at 12:30 that the club were able to say, look, it will be Grassi. He's got his work permit. He's got his visa. He'll be in the dugout and everything else. But then Gracia sat down and, you know, so the question was put to him, how prepared are you going to be for tomorrow, given the way this week has been? And he said, we'll be completely prepared. And you straight away got the impression of someone who had their head in the job all the way through the week. The fact that he didn't have a visa stopped him from actually being on the grass. It stops you from doing any kind of active work in that sense, but it doesn't stop you from speaking to people, and it doesn't prohibit you from having meetings with, say, you know, Scubala and Rob Price and others. And it was evident, I thought, that right the way through the week, he'd been putting plans together, ideas together, looking at Southampton. I'd spoken about how he'd analysed Chelsea-Southampton to look at how Southampton had played to be as prepared as he could for the weekend. And he spoke, Gracia, about having a few hours sleep per night. And I suspect that wasn't far from the truth.
In terms of his character, he's almost the polar opposite of Jesse Marsh, isn't he? Very understated, very quiet. He's kind of delivered minimal answers in the press conferences to the extent where, I don't know, there's not a right lot to report out of them almost, is there? He's just saying the bare minimum, whereas you always felt like Marsh was probably sometimes talking himself into a corner.
Yeah, I mean, everybody differs, don't they, in how they do it. He is very softly spoken, Gracia. He isn't going to give a huge amount away. I think somebody who covered him at Watford said to me, he's got this way of speaking softly, but sounding like he knows what he means to say and knows what he wants to say. It's almost like softness with a bit of underlying confidence. And certainly players who worked with him at Watford said exactly that. I think in public, and his public demeanour is that of a, you know, really nice, humble guy. And I think that is genuinely what he is. But he can be quite firm, I think. I think he'll run a really tight ship at Leeds. And, you know, whether it works, whether he's able to do what he needs to do to keep Leeds up, they've got a chance. I mean, that's the thing about Saturday, is that it puts it all on the line again, and it just gives them that renewed bit of optimism. But he didn't look frightened by it, I didn't think, on Friday at all. And okay, if you come in at the point where he's coming in, you do have the scope to say, I can't really be blamed for this. You know, I'm being thrown this hospital pass, tough gig. I'm going to try and make it happen. But really, if it doesn't happen, then when it comes to the conclusion and the verdicts on why it all went wrong this season, he will figure, but the blame's going to be pointed elsewhere. But he'll know as well that, you know, if he's here for these 15 games and Leeds go down, then it is on his record. You know, it in the same way as a manager coming in and keeping a club up, they can use that as a bit of a feather in the cap. Taking a team down doesn't look great in any circumstances, but I didn't think he looked anxious on Friday. I didn't think he sounded anxious. He seems pretty confident about what he's doing. He will know that this is going to be touch and go. You know, he'll know that this is going to be tight and that Leeds are not going to finish 15 points clear of the bottom three. But he said he was confident about them staying up, and I think he genuinely means that.
I mean, not to turn this into a Jesse Marsh bashing session by any stretch of the imagination, but my mind was immediately drawn towards, you know, that clip of him that was filmed from the West Stand where he was talking about the players being frightened and stressed and scared, you know, and he himself looked quite animated in delivering that. You just see the opposite, don't you, in Gracia, a man who is in control. It's like, it's that quiet determination. Whereas I start to wonder anyway, whether Jesse Marsh, what he was doing and what he was asking of the players and the way that he was asking it, perhaps contributed to those stress levels a little bit, because he himself seemed to never quite have it figured out in terms of why they were appearing scared or stressed. And maybe he didn't address the obvious point. It may have been partly down to him.
I thought it was hard to ignore the fact that after his first home game against Aston Villa back last February, he was talking about stress and the impact of stress and the difference it was making to the players and the negative effect it was having on them. And then after his last game at Forest, he was talking about stress and the impact of stress and the effect it was having on the players. And it seemed as if, in that respect anyway, that the same problem still existed and hadn't been dealt with. I think a little bit like with Firpo, probably risky to read too much into one game, particularly because of who it was against and because of the way Southampton played. But you will get a different approach, I think. You absolutely will. You'll get a different approach in public in the way that Gracia deals with the media. You are, I think, evidently going to get a different approach with the team, even if it isn't wildly different or, you know, a complete diversion from what was going on before. He will, I imagine, be a bit more flexible with formations and tactics. I mean, to go back to Firpo, one of the things I kind of wonder with him is whether he would be best suited to a team who play three at the back. So, it kind of eases the amount of defensive work that he has to do and gives him a bit more freedom to go forward, because I still think defensively that there will be questions there. But yeah, Gracia is a different personality, without a doubt. That was very obvious on Friday as you're sitting in his press conference. But the mistake with him would be to look at the kind of gentle approach to answering questions, you know, a kind of soft approach to the way he talks and to assume that that's how he is behind the scenes. I think it's the complete opposite.
Now, Angus Kinnear's programme notes would have you believe that he was always on their radar, which may well be the case. Did it feel to you like Alfred Schreuder was nearly the one a couple of weeks ago? And whether it is by accident or by design, we might have ended up with a far more solid option potentially in Gracia. And they say it's always caveated by pointing out that this is only one game and you've got to be careful not to read too much into it. But in terms of his character, his demeanour, his record, it all makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and as of last week when they went for him, you were starting to ask yourself who else there was actually that they could feasibly have gone for and got. I know there was talk about Benitez, but I think Benitez would have come cheap at all and might well have wanted much more in the way of longer term commitments. I think with Gracia, what we'll see is that this season will go as it goes and then there'll be a decision from that point onwards. Although I do think if it goes well for him, Leeds will absolutely be minded to commit and to go further and to leave him in the job. It would, I think, be disingenuous to paint this as the outcome that was always intended when Marsh was sacked after the Forest game. I mean, we know who they went for first. I know there was the line in the programme about, you know, unrealistic links that the media were making. And I suppose if you refer that to, say, Pochettino or Tuchel, who were mooted, then possibly. But I think those were more names that were showing up in the bookies' odds more than anything. A lot of what was being written was about Iriola and was about Arne Slot. And then over the weekend of the second Manchester United game was about Alfred Schreuder. And, you know, it would be wrong to say that the idea with Skubala last week wasn't for him to have more than the single game against Everton. I know he'd had the Manchester United games, but from the point where the decision was made that, you know, he will be in charge going forward, I think the assumption was that it would be Everton and Southampton as a minimum. You know, if those games went well and went fine, then I think Skubala would have continued. But because of what happened at Everton and because of the way that game played out and the level of the performance, and I think the extreme pressure that came on after that, you know, they were on to Gracia on the Sunday. Gracia pitched on the Sunday night. He came over very late on the Monday and then the deal was done on the Tuesday morning, subject to the work permit. It's where they are and it's where they've ended up. And I think, like you, I feel like it looks and feels like a pretty sensible appointment in the circumstances. But no, absolutely no pretending that this was the plan the morning after Forest.
And you just have to hope as well that we've got enough games available to us now to get the required points. Because you do feel, and you know, this will be borne out by the end of the season, won't it? You do feel that maybe if they'd made the change a little bit sooner, then we'd have given ourselves a better chance. But, you know, we are where we are. And just after 10 on a Monday morning, and doesn't the world feel like a better place having seen a win finally on Saturday at Elland Road? I know I feel about, I don't know, like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders emotionally, which is quite pathetic, really, isn't
always
it, as a grown-up?
I wonder as well, and maybe we should revisit this conversation in a couple of months, but I wonder what we'll start to see now is a team who I think we'll have it in them to compete somewhere like, I mean, Chelsea are not having a good season. So Chelsea this weekend, and you have it in your head that Chelsea are one of your top six clubs, top six sides. I mean, they are really, really, really struggling. And it feels as if Graham Potter is very close to his last legs there, unfortunately for him. But I would expect Leeds to compete in a game like that. But I wonder if we'll go from Leeds surprising us against Chelsea and against Liverpool, you know, games like that have almost beaten Arsenal, to actually Leeds delivering in the games where they're expected to deliver, or delivering more in the games where they're expected to. And okay, you know, not out of the more difficult fixtures, but perhaps doing what they're supposed to be doing, if that makes sense. Turning up and producing the results in the games where they're expected to do it. I wonder if we'll get a bit more of that from Gracia's team. And if you know, when the results at the end of the season, when you look back through them, if this period will make more sense than the period that's gone before.
I mean, we will talk about the Chelsea game towards the back end of the week once we get Fulham out of the way. And we will talk about that in a second, actually. I wonder if Leeds will set out to try and frustrate Chelsea a little bit at the weekend. Try and turn the crowd. Because I think much like, you know, it felt like Elland Road was almost approaching a knife edge situation in the run up to this one. It's getting a bit like that down there, isn't it? They are not happy at all, the Chelsea fans.
You'd be stupid not to try and play the psychology down there. And, you know, not to play on the fact that Potter does seem, with the exception of the Chelsea board to this point, does seem very short of support down there. I was pleased for him, and I thought it was a job he'd definitely earned, but it's not going well and it's not working. And it tends to be very difficult to stick those periods out at a club of that size. I mean, it's not easy to stick those periods out anywhere, but I think, you know, there are places where clubs tend to be or can afford to be a little bit more patient. I think Chelsea very soon will get backed into a corner if this doesn't sort itself out, not least because of the insane amounts of money that they've spent. But I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that players who played for Gracia at Watford always say was that he was a good tactician. You know, tactically, he was pretty bright and he's pretty clever and he's good at reading games. And I think I saw that in the match against Southampton, set alongside his comments afterwards about what it was going to be like, what he expected, about us waiting for a moment and winning it. And I don't think he was saying that because that's how it went. I think he was saying that because that's what he expected, and that's how he thought it would play out. And I think if you win a game like Southampton, don't get me wrong, they need points to keep flowing. But if you go to Chelsea and you lose, and you compete and you're in the game, but they get the better of it, I think it becomes easier to accept, and it becomes easier to be philosophical about. And this is almost what I mean. I think if Gracia can get them to the point where in the games that they should be winning, or the games that they should be taking something from, they actually are, then I think it really will settle people down, and it will help people to feel like they've got somebody in charge who has a grip on this.
Yeah, wins just take away pressure, don't they? Interesting how the Fulham FA Cup game sits in the calendar this week, Tuesday night as it is. Is it an unwelcome distraction, or is it a good chance to build momentum, or is it somewhere in between? What do you think?
Somebody made a very good point to me the other week, which is that everything these days is focused on where you are in the league. You know, are you staying up? Are you going down? Are you getting into Europe? Are you winning the title? Are you doing this, that, and the other? But in reality, football, you know, football seasons come and go, don't they? I don't doubt that it will have been a kick in the stomach for Burnley getting relegated last season. And I'm not suggesting anybody wants Leeds to go down. But they've then had a really, really good year under Vincent Kompany. They're going to get promoted. They're going to win the title. They're going to come back up, potentially in better shape. And I guess, to an extent, much as we don't like to say this, life goes on. But trophies last, don't they? Trophies last, and cup runs and events like that last. And I don't think it does anybody any good to lose tomorrow night. If you win tomorrow night, you're into a stage of the cup that Leeds have not been in for ages. I mean, you know, literally years. And it's there to be had. I was having a look back through the run that Watford had under Gracia when they got to the cup final in 2019. And it fell quite nicely for them. You know, it wasn't as if the games were really simple and really easy, but they avoided games where they knew they were going to have to play out of their skin to win. Almost every fixture they'd have gone into thinking, if we play well, then there really isn't much reason why we shouldn't win this. So they had Woking and they had QPR, and they had Newcastle away, which, yes, hard fixture, but, you know, Newcastle weren't quite the same level as they are now. They had Palace, semi-finals, they played Wolves, and then clearly they got completely trounced by Man City in the final. But it, without having followed that at all closely, because why would I have done, it looks like a sort of gradual process in which you maybe have found yourself in the semi-finals without, you know, much sensation before that, and suddenly realise we have a real, real chance here. And I think it will feel a little bit like that if Leeds go through tomorrow night. Suddenly you are into that stage of the tournament where you're thinking, decent draw, and we are right in the mix. So no, absolutely no point in throwing that game tomorrow. It'll be difficult. It won't be easy. Fulham have had a good season, and they, you know, the noises coming out of Craven Cottage from Marcus Silva and others are that they really want to go further in this competition as well. But no, with a good win behind them against Southampton, I think they'll want to make the most of this.
And an interesting taste of what will happen in the league perhaps down there. How much would you do in the way of changes to the lineup? Maybe would you start Ruta up front? So maybe someone like Sam Greenwood alongside him, something like that? What do you think?
I suspect he will mix it up, and I suspect he'll be conscious of managing them through the week with Chelsea to come at the weekend too. But I think he'll also know that if he weakens the team too much and if it doesn't have the right balance, then Fulham will probably win tomorrow night. I mean, defensively, they need to be very good again if Mitrovic starts. It's been a little while since he's scored now, but he's got a lot this season. You know, it's been probably the year where he's been able to say to people, I can actually perform at this level, not just in the Championship. It's got the makings of a really good tie, I think. Really good tie. One of those where it's dead even. You can't really call it beforehand. And there's quite a decent prize at stake.
And it's settled on the night as well, isn't it? Extra time and penalties if we need them.
Yes. It's getting to the point now where replays are just becoming less and less favourable for everybody apart from clubs who want to pull in a little bit of extra money. So yes, we will know by the end of the night what's what.
And I think I said on our Match Ball podcast after the game on Saturday that I guess the upside to the cup game being this Tuesday is it's more data for Gracia to work with, not just in training, but on the pitch as well. And although we might want a cup run, it's a chance to accumulate data about his squad without any consequences in terms of points.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But as I say, I don't think he'll feel it'll do them any good to get beaten. Again, going back to the thing about pragmatism, you probably have to accept that that isn't a place you just turn up and win. It's not like going to Accrington where, okay, you know, Leeds are not a club who generally have turned up to places like Accrington and won in the FA Cup. Leeds have tended to turn up to places like Accrington and given the competition what it wants, you know, which is a bit of humiliation and an embarrassment. But it's a game you should win away at Accrington. There's no question about that if you handle it properly. Fulham's different. So, you know, I don't think there need to be recriminations if it doesn't go well. But I mean, we'll find out when we speak to him later. I don't think Gracia would in any way be one of those people who thinks that getting out of the cup is advantageous to you. And actually, if you think back to the 18-19 season, Watford did have a decent league position that season. They were 11th, they were safe and everything else. But I'm sure they'd have started that season not quite sure about where they were going to be and probably started that season thinking that the first thing for them to worry about was to make sure that they were clear of the bottom three. But I was looking at some of his quotes from that year, and he did seem to be very serious about the FA Cup. He did seem to feel that it mattered, that he wanted to stay in it and he wanted to compete in it. And I hope he takes the same attitude again, because Leeds are in good shape in that front.
Well, fingers crossed, yeah, we continue on the way to Wembley. It'd be nice, wouldn't it, to get further. And we'll get back together towards the back end of the week, you, me and Michael, to assess what happened at Fulham, preview Chelsea and the march to safety. It's started now, you see.
Here we go.
We'll speak to you soon.
The Phil Hay Show.